The Heart of Rural America is brought to you by the new auction platform, Bid on Beef. We invite you to buy beef the cowboy way through an honest bidding process where you have the power to pick the ranch, pick the cut, and pick the price. You are in the driver's seat, and we are excited to ship beef directly to your door. Use code WELCOME10 for your first $10 to shop when you register to bid at bidonbeef.com. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
Hey everyone, it's Amanda Radke back for another episode of the Heart of Rural America podcast, the show where we highlight great people doing inspiring things in their rural communities to make agriculture and their country stronger. I am here at the Women in Ag Leadership Conference in, tell me the town, because there's no way my South Dakota accent will get it right.
You won't. Rio Doso.
Yep, I would have said Ruidoso. Say it one more time. Where am I?
Riadoso.
Well, that's where I am.
There you
where
go.
I am is where I am. In New Mexico, I'm going to speak in the morning, and it's been a great evening of fellowship. And my guest tonight, we got talking about an issue that's near and dear to her heart that I think a lot of you are going to appreciate an update on. Erica Valdez, she is an expert speaking all across the country on the border and what is happening in ranching country as it relates to our southern border. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I guess just to start, before we like dive right into the nitty gritty, tell me a little bit about yourself and what your family does in ag.
Okay, well, we have a cow-calf ranch in the very southwest corner of the state. We run a commercial cow herd, registered bulls, and we raise quarter horses as well.
Okay, what kind of cattle?
Angus.
Angus cattle, all right.
Black Angus.
Black Angus, yes, wonderful. To the border, where are you kind of located? Give us a feel for where you're positioned.
We're about 7 miles from the Arizona line, and we're about 25 miles from the Mexican border.
Okay, so maybe compare and contrast the Biden years, the last 4 years, compared to maybe now. Are you noticing some differences?
Maybe
set the stage. What was it like really the last 4 years and beyond, I suppose? But because up in South Dakota, we're hearing the headlines, you know, there is some chatter in the ag community, but I think unless you're really living it, you don't really know. So what did it look
like? Yeah. So, well, I'll give you a little history. So when I was in high school, growing up down there, it was no big thing to run into groups of 100 sometimes of illegals coming across the border. Okay. And at that time, they were mostly legitimate family units looking for a better way of life, very humble, very kind, very thankful. They typically wouldn't take anything from you without working for a couple days. They didn't want anything for free. They would work and take whatever money you would give them. And if you give them a ride to the interstate, they'd be appreciative. Like, it was just a different kind of people. And it was nothing, like my parents never worried about us riding out in the pasture because it was just part of it. But as you know, I went off to college, came home, and when you raise a family in that environment now, it's very different. Like, we're running into 18 to 30-year-old males. Most of them are wearing military camo. They're heavily armed. They've got 50-pound bales of drugs on them. They're very aggressive and demanding, and it's just a very, very different type of mindset and personality that you run across now.
So the guys that you see traveling like that, do they have kids with them sometimes?
No. I mean, because we're just far enough off the border, the guys that we're running across are true drug runners. So they're not bringing kids with them.
So do they typically try not to interact with the ranchers? Like, are they running through the night, or do you actually...
It depends.
Yeah.
It depends on the time of year. During the summer, they travel at night more than anything. But that's also where it's very harsh conditions and very hot and very dry. So they're usually a little more desperate. By the time they get to us, they're thirsty, they're hungry. find far more desperate in the way they approach you. Like, especially if they haven't made their drop yet, they're going to do what they can to make their drop. And then once their drug drop is made, and it's kind of a free for all back to the border. So
okay,
that's when you get vehicles stolen, houses broken into, that kind of thing. Cause they want to be picked up. During the previous administration, if they got picked up, it was just a free ride back to the border.
Oh.
So we've seen a drastic change since President Trump took office. As far as traffic, it's pretty much stopped. We haven't had anybody come to the house. We haven't seen any fresh sign out in the pasture. It's very different.
So is it really just because the messaging has changed, or are you seeing more of a presence on the border?
Absolutely. The message was there, and I think there was some intimidation to begin with.
Sure.
But the presence on the border between the Border Patrol, the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, it's very different now. The message is clear.
Yeah,
and they know that he's not messing around. And the Border Patrol agents, the morale with them is so much higher. They're so much more pleasant to be around. They're excited to be able to do their job again.
Yeah, they were basically told to stand down.
Were processing paperwork.
Wow, wow. While watching an invasion on our southern border. So you've been up to South Dakota
several times.
So where have you spoke? And I guess in South Dakota, at least, just to kind of give me a reference point. And then maybe talk about some of the misconceptions that you come and share with people, like us South Dakotans at the border.
Yeah. So the first time I ever went up, I spoke in Deadwood at the South Dakota Women in Ag Conference. It was my first time ever really doing any public speaking on it. I was familiar with the subject, obviously been around it my whole life, but I had never presented it. And it was really important to me that they saw a side of, like, from the whole border, not just my little corner of the world. So I talked to people that I knew that lived from San Diego all the way to McAllen, Texas, and tried to get pictures, you know, from all the way along the border so that people would see it wasn't just in our part of the world. It was a great conference, and I learned a lot about public speaking, and oh my gosh, your state is so beautiful. I just love it.
We
up
kind
there.
Of like it, yeah.
We're so lucky. And then I spoke at I'm drawing a blank on all of them. I spoke at RCAF.
Stock Growers.
The last one I spoke with was South Dakota Stock Growers in Rapid City. I spoke at the RCAF convention in Rapid City. There was something with South Dakota Farm Bureau, but I don't remember where it was exactly.
That's all right.
And in North Dakota a couple times.
So you've been up here several times. Mm-hmm. So I guess what are some misconceptions or some things that you would maybe kind of debunk when you're telling the story of the border?
Well, I think mainstream media is obviously not portraying realities of what it's truly like down there. So to me, rather than just standing up in front of people for an hour and a half, I wanted to take pictures so that I think a picture's worth 1,000 words. And when they could see pictures of actual traffickers coming across, trash that was left over, damage to property, damage to fences and waters and all that kind of stuff. And then the drugs themselves that we were finding, when somebody that's never been around it sees it, they're really blown away. I think the most impactful thing that I've shown yet, I've shown a picture of a 10,000 gallon water storage that the illegals had come through the night before and broke the valve on trying to get water and drained 10,000 gallons on the ground.
Wow.
So like to us, where water is precious and every single drop is pumped out of the ground, to have it just run on the ground all night and you spend weeks trying to catch that up, especially in the middle of the summer, it's devastating.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most impactful story for, you know, the groups that I was talking to.
Sure.
Because it was relatable.
Right. Yeah. No, just absolutely.
Yeah.
As far as violence goes, have you had ranching families be impacted?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can tell you a lot of stories, but the two that ring the biggest bell for me and kind of really drive it home for me is it was 2009, and we had a rancher that borders us, not really directly borders us. They're southwest of us on the Arizona line, but he had radioed to his family, said that came across some illegals that he saw out in the pasture, and he was going to go check on him. And that was the last time they heard from him. They found him and his dog killed the next morning. Nobody knows what happened, but they do know that they tracked whoever had killed him back across the border.
Wow.
So he was never brought to justice.
Wow.
Yeah. So that shook up our whole community pretty significantly.
I would say.
What really started me on this talking endeavor was in 2016, we had a man that worked for the local well company. He went down, drove down to the border and was going to walk a cat off this ranch and back to the highway. And he was just wrong place at the wrong time. He drove over this hill and there was a truck that some illegals had drove across the night before and had buried it in some mud. And they took him at gunpoint, threw all of his tools out of his truck, put their drugs in his pickup, bound him, gagged him, and drove him across the state line to make their drop. And when they made their drop, they turned him loose, thank God, and just told him if he reported it or talked to the police that they would come and retaliate.
Wow.
So obviously he didn't ever really speak much about it. It never even made state news, much less national news.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So there's lots of stories like that.
Sure. So I guess what do ranchers do? It's just a different mindset. You know, up in South Dakota, we're worried about blizzards and, you know, totally different problems. But how does the ranching community protect themselves or prepare for this? Or what safeguards do they put into place?
Everyone's armed, obviously, all the time. If you have to go start pumps or check waters at night, you don't unless you absolutely have to. Like, it's not smart to be out there, especially far away from the headquarters late at night.
Okay.
As far as like our kids, like we have an 18-year-old daughter. When I really started this speaking engagement, she was probably 10 or 11 at the time. And I'll never forget it. I had left her one day. She had a friend with her. Her friend was probably 9. She was 11. They were supposed to ride this canyon down to where we were going to pull some cattle together. And I told her, I said, you guys stay off your phones. Don't be jacking around. Like, you know, pay attention. Because the canyon that they were going to be riding, we knew that it was frequented by drug traffickers a lot. And so I was like, stay alert, pay attention. Don't be, you know, fooling around.
Right.
And I about killed my horse that day because I topped out, I think, 30 times trying to make sure she was okay. And it all was fine.
Yeah.
It all turned out fine. Everybody came together. The drive was done. It was a good day. But I was furious about it. And I made a post about it on Facebook because that's what you do, right?
Right. Of course.
And then New Mexico Farm Bureau picked it up and they did an interview with me. And then it just kind of expanded from there.
Okay.
And pretty soon we were taking, you know, film crews to the border and posting all kinds of interviews and doing, you know, speaking engagements across the country. And
so somewhat quite accidentally, you became a face of the border
issue.
Yes. And I'm just kind of coming off of a tail end of a fight of a carbon pipeline in South Dakota. And it's like you kind of accidentally find yourself in these places where you're like telling the story of a lot of people. And it's a big responsibility.
It's a very big responsibility. I take it very seriously. And it's important to me that people understand the realities of what we really are facing, because obviously the mainstream media is not doing that. Like I said before, it's very important to me that I'm representing the people that live along the border accurate. Really tried to make sure that I was telling not only my story, but theirs as well.
Right.
At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus with its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract. BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you.
The Heart of Rural America is presented to you by CK6 Consulting Services. I have the great pleasure of working alongside the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, and Cody Fleeman, and it's an honor to assist cattle producers as they strive to meet their business goals. With a purebred Angus specialization, we have a full slate of auction sales coming up as we work to maximize price discovery and capture true value for our clients and customers. Plus, let us help you identify your next herd sire for the upcoming breeding season. At CK6 Source, you'll find great customer service, fast shipping, and a focus on leading Angus genetics. Learn more about what we do at CK6Consulting.com and CK6Source.com. We would love to assist you any way we can. God bless.
So, you know, the media portraying it, what's been the most frustrating part of how they've described the situation? Like, is it just kind of the gaslighting of like, this isn't an issue at all? Or
The blatant ignorance of it, just completely ignoring that there really is an issue. And like we were just talking with that other couple, like our State Department of Ag won't even send a livestock scale inspector south of the interstate down there without a buddy.
Wow.
But there's no issue.
Wow. And I guess, was that both on a national, your governor's kind of checked out too, correct? You can't barely have guns here in New Mexico. Yeah. Everybody's armed. No, they're not.
Does not support us at all. Like she was furious when the National Guard was deployed to the border. She's even more angry now that the Department of Defense has been deployed, because we have active military on the border now, not just National Guard.
Right, right.
And so it's very disappointing.
This whole issue has gotten to be politicized
very
with presidential elections. And remember the last round or the one before when it was like, oh, the kids are in cages and they're being separated from their parents. Like, were you kind of, did you have a front row seat to that?
Absolutely.
Or like, what would your statement, what's the real story on that?
Yeah, that was right around the time of President Trump's first election. And I remember it was right after our friend had been kidnapped on the border and or taken at gunpoint. And we had this big political meeting in Animas, which there's like 250 people in the whole town. It's small.
Yeah.
And we invited both legislatures from Arizona and New Mexico to come. We got Arizona and New Mexico cattle growers to kind of endorse it. And we invited every single presidential candidate to the meeting.
Sure.
None showed up. There were a couple that sent some representatives, which is fine. We had over 1,200 people come to our school, though, for the meeting public that were genuinely concerned about the issue.
Wow.
So that tells you that there's concern.
Right, right. So do you remember which presidential candidates sent people? Like, who showed up in any capacity?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't remember. I should know that.
They didn't do anything, obviously. So, yeah, it was just to check a box. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they went there.
And so at that time, was the frustration just really I can imagine the suffering of the people was being used as basically a debate talking
point. That's exactly what it was. And the thing that's super frustrating to me is every single candidate was running on some sort of border security policy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody was really wanting to follow through with anything.
Right, right.
What's so frustrating.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You don't forget these politicians when they do that.
I don't know which one it was, but one of them had come down to Santa Teresa, which is the port right outside of El Paso, Texas, to say they were going to look at the border. Well, that was, an 18-foot high wall separating the town of Santa Teresa from America. And they made this big deal and took all these pictures and all this, hoopla. And they never even went 4 miles east or west where it turns to barbed wire.
Right.
Or no fence.
And isn't that funny how your tragedy, your suffering of all these people, it becomes a political photo op. It's propaganda.
It absolutely is.
So, yep, we're helping as long as we can get the picture for social media.
Yep.
What do folks need down here for help? Like, if there was an action item of, folks are listening to this podcast all across the country, what do they need to know? How can they assist you? Because I always feel like it's like, I hate just talking about a problem and not
having a solution.
And obviously things are kind of getting better, but
I think, I get asked that question a lot and I don't really have an answer. The only thing I can say is this: you need to make sure that one, you're fully educated on the issues itself and you understand what the realities are like on the border. And then you are doing your part to make sure your elected officials understand that as well.
Right.
Because they're the ones that are going to get to vote on policy.
Right.
And if they don't know, then how can they vote the right way?
Right.
So that's the main reason that I'm doing this is just for education. So people understand what it really is like.
So are there some agricultural groups that are kind of spearheading the effort to go to the Capitol and work on policy for border control? Or is there a grassroots, is there a citizen-led effort? What does that look like, boots on the ground?
I spoke at the RCAF convention and I was really thankful for them because they had actual policy written that they were wanting to propose and try to pass.
Sure.
And that's very proactive, in my opinion. Yes. I was very thankful for that. That's probably the first committee meeting or any kind of conference that I'd been to where there was an actual effort to write some sort of policy for it.
Sure. And so I guess, was there anything state policy wise that kind of helps you, or is your state pretty much?
New Mexico Cattle Growers has a pretty strong policy on border security, and New Mexico Farm and Livestock Bureau does too. And they do what they can, but their hands are tied when it comes to our legislature and our leadership.
And so
they do what they can.
You're in a very blue state.
Very.
Very on both houses.
And it's not only blue, but it's the sanctuary state too. So the cities like Albuquerque and Las Cruces, which are the two heaviest populated cities in the state, are sanctuary cities. So the majority of their citizenship is illegal and they're getting to vote. So you can see which way that vote's going to go.
Wow. Wow. And so how does the New Mexico cattle rancher make sure they have any kind of voice or representation?
To me, it's conferences like this: Women in Ag, New Mexico Farm and Livestock Bureau, the Mexico Cattle Growers. You have to be involved with those agencies and organizations and make sure that the people that are lobbying for them understand what the true impacts are on the border.
So is there something you're hoping Trump will do in this term?
He's already doing more than what we could hope for right now.
Sure.
He has bodies on the border and they're doing their very best to secure it. So,
yeah.
So that's great.
Now, before the recording started, you were telling me a little bit about the Border Patrol. What's the attitude now?
They're so much happier. The morale with them is just, they're thankful to be able to do their job. Most of them signed up for a service employment, wanting to serve others and protect their country. And I know during Biden's administration, whenever their hands were tied, they couldn't do anything. And there was a lot of frustration, a lot of low morale. And so they're just excited to be able to do their job again.
Right. Well, I can imagine if you get into that career, you're a patriot. You care about this country and then to watch the invasion happening on our
border. Not be able to do anything about it. It's
I have a hard time wrapping my head around just the sheer numbers of it all. Before the recording too, you were telling me about just the groups you would see, how big, like, it's pretty crazy how many people have crossed this
border. It is.
And I guess talk numbers and maybe countries represented, or like, what kind of people did you see?
During Biden's administration, when you saw the large swarms of asylum seekers that were coming across, that was overwhelming for any town directly on the border. Their public systems were completely shattered. Wow. Because of the sheer numbers of people coming across. And what Border Patrol calls OTMs, other than Mexicans. So there was, you know, Cubans, El Salvador, there was Puerto Ricans and Guatemala and Hondurans. And then you take all of these groups from all these different countries and you stick them in these holding cells. And you can imagine the mass chaos, because a lot of them are from rival gangs, rival countries, not like they weren't good neighbors. And wow. So you can imagine it was ugly. Lots wow. of fighting.
I can't even imagine it. I'm thinking of like what I would see online, the pictures of like people in brand new sneakers and that yeah. kind of thing. So like,
well, and that's the other thing. Like I say it all the time when I do my talks and I show pictures of the border, they were getting bused to a couple miles from the border. They were only walking across a couple miles.
Right.
They were getting bused up major highways to the closest border point. And then
so
coming
who
across.
Was they? Who was busing them?
Different aid programs. I don't know names. I don't know. But I know like there were several different aid organizations that were providing assistance to get them closer to the wow. border.
Yeah. Those pictures are, it's like, they're just in my brain. It's like you saw families and flip-flops and little kids with like,
and the scary thing about it is they were giving asylum to true family units. So like a lot of those kids might not even be with an actual parent or an actual grandparent. Like they were just claiming that they were family units for the asylum. And then they come in and they get processed and they're assigned to a sponsor that could be in Virginia. They get paid to get to wherever their sponsor is. And then they just disappear into the system.
Wow. Wow. And so were those kids that were kind of being portrayed as part of a family unit, were those trafficked children? Or
it's hard to know.
It's hard to know. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you just,
it could have been somebody that like their parents were sending up hoping for a better way of life for them and they okay. couldn't leave. We had a feeling that was probably the case a lot of the time.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Or there very well could have been some trafficking where a single male was trying to come across for no good reason. And
sure.
You guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt, exactly as nature made it. It contains 60 plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKE to save. Or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount.
Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the Deluxe Chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the U.S. of A., Real Tough is family-owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtough.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it.
You know, one thing, just being a Christian and you hear like the argument, like it's, you should love your neighbor, love the immigrants, but it's like borders are really like an individual country's identity. Yep. Like, this is our nation. And if you want to come, I guess, could you speak to that maybe Absolutely. A little bit? I'm sure you've heard it all.
Yeah, I have. From a humanitarian standpoint, yeah. and as a mother and yep. a female, like, yep. obviously, it's a bleeding heart subject, right?
Right.
Like, you want so badly for them to have a better life. And you know that what they're running from is far worse than anything we've ever endured here,
sure.
right? So
yep.
You want to give them an opportunity, but at the same time, they need to do it legally. There
right.
has to be some sort of a solution to the immigration system right now to make that process easier so that
right.
they can come here, be accounted for, be in, you know, a contributing member of society, work on their citizenship without feeling like they have to do it under the rug.
Right, right. Well, and it's just interesting when a government lacks leadership, or maybe this was obviously intentional, but it's like these decisions have consequences. So it's not like there weren't other victims
right.
in this. Oh, we're going to open the borders to these immigrants. Okay, well, then what about all the ranching families that have
yeah.
their equipment and tractors and trucks? Yeah. And
what I say all the time too is, I mean, yeah, we deal with the traffic and the trash and everything that comes with the people coming directly across, but they're not staying in Animas, New Mexico.
Right.
They're heading north and they're going to your communities and your school systems, and they're embedding themselves in communities all over this country. And that's where they're bringing their drugs to your communities. They're bringing their drugs to your schools. And that's why everybody in this country needs to be concerned about it, not just border residents.
So speaking on the drugs, do you think it's a lot of the fentanyl? Is it cocaine? Like what are
We're
they
hardly seeing any marijuana coming across anymore. It's hardcore cocaine, meth, fentanyl.
You had described like seeing some of this for the first time. I guess what, for someone who has never seen something like this, what does that look like when you like encounter that in a pasture?
Well, it depends on if they've made their drop or not. Like for me, whenever we tell our daughter all the time, if you're riding and you see bags of any kind, like just go the other way. Even if you're trailing cattle, like you leave your cattle, get away from the situation, because if it's there, it hasn't been picked up yet for a reason. And there's most likely a spotter that's watching you. So like, get out of the way, leave your cattle, come to whoever's next to you, and let's leave it alone.
Let's get out of there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you jump some drug runners, it's the same thing. We don't ever try to retaliate. We just kind of wave and try to ride by. And I had a really scary encounter several years ago where I jumped some drug runners up a canyon, and it was scary. And I was really shook up afterwards. And I remember crying and praying about it and telling my husband, I was like, if Danley, our daughter, had been with us that day, she would have been up that canyon because it was the easiest to ride. And I just was terrified thinking if she had been by herself, and there were four of them, they were heavily armed. They were brushed up under some oak. And
so by jumped, you mean like you
came
just,
up on them.
You didn't see them coming,
right.
and there they were.
Yeah.
And so did they talk to you? Did
oh,
they?
Oh, no. I was riding up this narrow canyon, and I was looking up on the slopes to look for cattle that we had missed. We had moved everything out of the mountain country the day before. And my horse stopped to pee, and I was kind of leaned over my saddle, like looking up the slopes. And I looked down in front of me, and probably 20 feet from me, there were four of them brushed up under a juniper tree. They had carpet shoes on, meaning their feet were wrapped in carpet, so they don't leave tracks. They had military camo on, black masks, they had ARs, and they all had 50-pound bales of drugs on their back and 25-pound packs in the front. When I saw them, I jumped and I reached for my pistol. And when I did, they kind of got aggressive. And I took my hand off my pistol and I just kind of waved. My horse was still peeing.
Yeah, and you're like, hey, horse, we're in a situation here.
I just kind of waved at him. And as soon as he was done, I had to ride right past, and the canyon bottom was real narrow. And I just was praying the whole time, like, please don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me. Well, the next day I was in there again from another direction. I climbed up on the mountain, the peak that I was looking up the day before, and I found a very fresh spotter's camp. Like you could tell it was probably the day before. It was most likely somebody had seen me coming up the canyon and probably radioed to those guys and said, you know, rider coming up or whatever. And
get out of it.
They took cover. And
okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So you like made eye contact.
Oh yeah.
Guys. You were with
them. Yeah, I was 20 feet from them, baby.
Wow. And so was it hard? I mean, I'm sure your heart was pumping.
Racing.
You're trying to keep your horse.
And like, there's no service.
Yep.
So I finally, and sure enough, as soon as I passed them, I found cattle and I had to keep kicking them down into that canyon bottom to follow out down to where some water was, where I was going to meet my husband. And like, I rode right over where my horse had stopped and where they had been brushed up. They were long gone by then. By the time I got back to the trailer, I was just shaking and I was just emotional. It's such an emotional thing. I was so thankful that Danley wasn't there. And I was so thankful that nothing happened. And I was furious that it even had happened and right. just all the emotions.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. You're like, I don't have to think about that in South Dakotas. But like the idea of I'm just trying to trail some cattle, trying to mm-hmm. do my job on the ranch. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about like the worst case scenarios yeah. that could happen.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That could be your last yep. day.
Even like trotting across the pasture or loping across the pasture, trying to get around cattle or whatever. You have to be really smart about it because they'll dig these like 12-inch deep. It looks like a coffin. Like you can lay just deep enough for a body to lay down in. They'll cover it with yucca branches and stuff. And they either lay in it or they hide drugs in it whenever border patrol's on them. So if you're running across the pasture trying to get around something, you stumble in one of those, you're going to break your neck. So
wow.
you always have to be watching for stuff like that too.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I'm sure they get rather creative then.
Very. They're not dumb.
It's not their first rodeo. No. They're kind of probably good at it. So I guess we're kind of running on to the tail end of the show here, but I guess anything we haven't covered that you wish people knew that's happening?
I just think the most important thing is don't necessarily listen to what mainstream media is saying. If you really want to understand something, everybody knows somebody in this industry, right?
Right.
You have connections to find out what it really is like on the border. Mm-hmm. Make those connections, have those conversations, and educate your legislators, because that's the most important thing.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I've learned too. Like now, kind of being through some of these political fights myself, and you just see how things get positioned, what the politicians say, what the media says, and how they're so far from reality. Mm-hmm. It really has reminded me too, even on social media, like I really anymore have a 48-hour rule before I even react to something, because yeah. it's like that knee-jerk thing. It could be so far from the yeah. reality of what's yeah. actually happening yeah. that it's, yeah, I had a cousin in the National Guard that was actually down building fence, but from the South Dakota National Guard. Mm-hmm. But I think it was more fanfare than it was like mm-hmm. actually getting things done. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting
yeah,
to know
I bet.
Too. Like, it's like, okay, are we actually securing the border or does it just look
yeah.
good?
You and know? That's a funny thing that these poor National Guard, you know, these guys from Ohio or the Midwest somewhere, New Jersey, like have never been down there, and thank you for your service and we appreciate you, but they are just blindsided when they get down there and see what it's really like
between the heat, you mean, or
yeah,
just
the heat,
like,
and this is the elements garbage. and the illegals coming across,
they
and
just
the encounters, they're
like wide-eyed, and
my first one today.
I know, I feel like I need to come visit the ranch because I feel like I've asked
that.
Such naive questions that you're probably like, this idiot doesn't have
it's
no
not,
clue.
It's not naive, you just don't know.
You don't know until you see it.
Yeah,
to experience
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I appreciate your time today. Yeah. It's going to be a great couple days here in New Mexico. And I guess, where can folks follow you online? I'm sure, do you post some things online?
Yeah, I post. I have a lot of followers on Facebook because of all this public speaking. I have a lot of people started following me. So my Facebook is Erica Johnson Valdez. And that's probably the easiest because
okay.
that's where I
Great.
Post the most.
And do you have any speaking engagements coming up?
I don't have anything booked right now. We've talked to North Dakota Farm Bureau a couple times, but I don't think anything's locked
okay.
in yet.
Well, they better get you booked.
Right?
You heard it here first on the Heart of Rural America.
Right?
So thank you so much for coming on the show and have a great rest
Thanks.
Of the conference.
Appreciate you.
Yes.
While I've got you here, I would love to invite you to check out my website, AmandaRadke.com. Each week, I share my column, this podcast, and new items to shop for farm and ranch families, including my children's books that celebrate agriculture. Use code DUSTYTRAIL to save 15% on your next purchase. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the Heart of Rural America.